behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, and I'm Ben Bolin. Ben, we've got a topic today that is, again, train-related.
Yeah, we're on the train.
I guess we are.
I worked on that one.
Today,
earlier.
I want to talk about, you mentioned this, but yeah. Today we are going to talk about tank engines. Now, this, to me, I'll be honest. When you first said we should talk about tank engines,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking military tanks.
Oh, like a Abrams M1 or something.
Yeah, yeah. Not the case, right?
No, not the case at all, which is something we could both be forgiven for assuming. It is not an Abrams tank, not the military hardware. Instead, this tank engine refers to something more like a water tank.
Yeah, steam locomotive, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, every one of these that we're going to talk about is a steam locomotive because of the characteristics of a tank, right? So we have to determine what makes a tank locomotive different from a standard steam locomotive, right?
Great point. And we can start with a children's story. We can start with Thomas the Tank Engine, right?
Yeah, it seems so elementary, but that's what we're going to do, right?
Yeah. So Thomas the Tank, if you notice him and some of his friends, he's got other train buddies. He's got Edward, Henry, Gordon, and James. And these other trains all have coal cars like a normal steam engine does. And we know that these sorts of locomotives, when we say a coal car, it's the car directly behind the actual locomotive, the engine. And this is where this holds the coal that is fed into the engine itself.
Yeah, that's called a tender. Mm-hmm. And a tender is again that second smaller car that you often see or you always really see behind a steam engine, mm-hmm. That carries the fuel really. So it could be wood, it can be coal,
sure.
It can be oil.
That's a really good point.
They could even carry spare water back there if they wanted to.
Yeah.
Now, that's what makes this, that's what makes a tank car or a tank engine, I guess, or we can call it a tank locomotive if you want to.
Yeah.
I like tank engine, I think.
I think it's more accurate.
I think that we should go to a tank engine, and that's what makes these things different, right?
Right. Thomas the Tank Engine has no coal car adjoining him. Instead, he has these large square tanks near, or on either side of his cylindrical boiler.
Yeah, and it's funny that in a kid's show, there's this, it's pretty realistic, really, in that, you know, he's an accurate depiction of what a tank engine would look like. So he's Thomas the Tank, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, to me, I don't know why it is, but it's just funny that they were accurate about that.
Right. It's a weird thing not for us to nitpick, but,
no.
It's strangely accurate. These square tanks, that's what creates a tank engine because, unlike the other, I almost said animals, unlike the other trains or locomotives, the tank engine here, Thomas, carries its own coal.
Yeah, he's self-contained.
He's self-contained.
Yeah, he carries his own coal and his own water, right?
Yes.
Now, the tanks are the water tanks.
Right.
And those are the ones that are next to the boiler. And mm-hmm. that you gotta imagine that those are kind of preheating the water as well, right?
Yeah.
And the coal that Thomas would carry, and I promise we'll get off the Thomas thing in a moment.
Yeah, but we're almost done with Thomas.
But the coal that, let's say, Thomas would carry would be in a small bin at the back, like at the mm-hmm. at the rear of the train, but not in its own separate car. So, in other words, this thing is completely self-contained. There's no additional mm-hmm. car behind him.
And we'll get into some of the pros and cons of that as well. But with the stats, the tanks might hold between 1,000 to 2,000 gallons of water.
That's a huge amount of water.
It's a lot
really.
Of water.
That is a lot of water, but you know what? The thing is, that sounds like a lot of water, but
right.
in the world of trains, steam engines and, you know, what they have to do, mm-hmm. That is not a huge amount of water. In fact, you find that these tank engines have a sort of a limited range, really. Not that, you know, it's extremely short, but mm-hmm. It's better suited to short journeys.
Yeah, these are definitely short-haul steam engines. So this sort of implies the question that we should ask now. Scott, why on earth would somebody build one of these? What would be the reason?
Well, I mean, I guess because they're very agile. You know, they're able to be used within the locomotive yard.
Okay.
And that, you know, they can do what they call shunting. When they couple and uncouple, cars and move them around the yard.
Uh-huh.
They can handle short line travel. Mm-hmm. You know, like we said, they're not very good for long distances, right?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. It seems like there's got to be other reasons, right? I mean, it's an efficient design, I suppose, in that you know, it's small, it's lightweight, the weight is where it should be, right?
Mm-hmm. And shunting, I think, is one of the big questions here because this ability to be self-contained without a need for second adjoining car gives it a massive advantage in the train yard as a utility player. So when you need to shunt from different lines, when you need to do some switching duties or just handle short lines, mm-hmm. this is your go-to. Funny thing about tank engines, they're not very common in the United States, but they were very popular in England.
Yeah, you know what? I've got a list here of benefits and disadvantages that I want to cover in a moment, but mm-hmm. Which we'll go through, you know, maybe three or four different things for each.
Yeah.
But I think maybe we should talk about the different types of tank locomotive, because
mm-hmm.
not all tank locomotives look like, let's say, Thomas the Tank.
Good point.
They have different designs, and I bet that people have seen a lot of these and don't really know that they're all that different. They don't know that, you know, the six mm-hmm. different types. There's more than six, really.
Right.
First, there are side tanks.
Right, and that's the one that we originally mentioned. That's where the water is in two tanks on either side of the boiler.
Yeah, like great big rectangular tanks mm-hmm. that are kind of preheating the water. In every case, these are being preheated by the boiler.
And the coal, again, is stored in a little container or bunker at the rear of the car.
Exactly, so that's a side tank. Now, there's also a saddle tank. And that's where the tank sits on top of the boiler like a saddle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could go online and find a photo of each one of these if you like. But the saddle tank, I mean, it's almost like someone has just laid the water tank across the top. It's got an inverted U shape, I guess, mm-hmm. that lays across the top of the boiler. Then there's the, would you say, pannier or pannier tank? I don't know.
Oh, let's go with pannier.
Pannier. Okay, let's French it up. Right. That's a box-shaped tank that's located on either side of the boiler. So this one's really an unusual look.
Yeah, this one, I know from the description that you guys are hearing, it sounds as though we're just re-describing. We're redescribing the side tank, but it is different.
No, these are up on high on the side, almost like welded to the side mm-hmm. of the boiler. And there's space above it and below it. That's maybe one of the most unusual looking ones to me.
Yeah, for sure. There's another type, the well tank.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The well tank, I think, is another anomalous one, in that the water supply is kept in a tank under the coal
mm-hmm.
instead of on the sides of the boiler.
Yeah, it's under. Well, it's completely under. I think it's mm-hmm. in between the frames. So
mm-hmm.
Center of gravity is really low on these. So it's really good. The water, of course, adds weight. So we'll find out later that that's helpful as well.
Mm-hmm. Then there's two more types, right?
Yeah, two. Well, no, I've got, I guess two more official types, and then there's it's kind of a mix. But
mm-hmm.
There's a rear tank, or they call it back tank. And obviously that's, you know, where the well, they're like wing tanks that are located on the sides that run the length of the smoke box. And if you're wondering what a smoke box is, now that they, you know, this gets into all this train jargon, but
train terminology.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you search for steam locomotive components, you can find out the details of that. But the smoke box is where all the hot gases that have passed from the firebox and through the boiler, that's where they collect.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the smoke box is. And that's where the rear tanks, I guess, they run the entire length of that smoke box. The next type, or the last type, maybe the last specific type, are the inverted saddle tank. And this is what, a variation on the wing tank, where two tanks were joined underneath the smoke box and supported that way. And the very last one is, obviously, there's a combination. So you can have like a side tank, well tank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so any combination of what you've got up here, a saddle tank along with, you know, a well tank.
Mm-hmm.
Any of those combinations of those that will work. And I think that it's just more a matter of space and how you want to use that engine, what you want to do with that engine, and usable space above board, like so you can walk along the top edge of it. You can service it easily.
And how you want to distribute the weight, because let's keep in mind with that last part, the combination tank engine, that means it's possible, for instance, to build a ring engine, a ring tank, where you've got an inverted saddle and a saddle. To say the least, that would be a bit difficult. It would be a bit less plausible.
And, we mentioned that they preheat the water, and that's beneficial in that it will boil faster.
Right.
In that, that helps them out. It's a little more efficient that way. Instead of having the water located in a remote location and then brought up to the boiler, where it stays cool, these trains, they take an enormous amount of water to operate. Yeah. I mean, these steam trains. Now, we said some of those tanks are 1,000 or 2,000 gallons. I would think that maybe a well tank would even be able to carry more than that.
Right. Yeah. The
lots of space.
When we're talking about that tank measurement, I think that applies specifically to the side tank that we're talking about. Now, you want to talk about England for a second?
Yeah, sure.
I got some English stuff.
Oh, great.
Okay. So we mentioned that these types of train engines were more common in England. Riddle me this. Why?
I have no idea.
So,
why is it?
Thank you for asking. I heard tell, at least in Tennessee, that's what we say, heard tell, that there was a difference in fuel that dictated the popularity of these vehicles, during the 30s, the earlier British locomotives were using coke to power their to power their locomotives, while Russia and the United States were focusing more on wood. And so this means that the wood takes up more space.
Yeah, I guess if you're carrying a wood car, you can imagine that it's not stacked neatly. And, I'm sure it could be, but you're not going to mostly when you see those wood cars left behind, it looks like something dumped the wood into the bin. It doesn't look like it's stacked neatly like you would cordwood or something
like
that.
And you need a lot of wood.
You need a lot of wood to keep that thing going, right? But coal will burn a lot longer, right?
Yes. And that's probably one of the primary factors for the popularity difference. And then I wanted to talk about one of the earliest tank engines built, at least in England, was a saddle tank. And this was working in 1849. Oh, yeah, I should mention when I said during the 30s, I meant 1830s.
Oh, 18. Okay, no problem. You know what? That saddle tank idea makes perfect sense to me because that's more than likely a gravity-fed system. And for the time, that probably made perfect sense, that you get the water up as high as possible. It's still being heated by the boiler. Mm-hmm. All that seems to make perfect sense to me. I get why that would work.
And you can go on to a couple of forums, a couple of places online, and find some, as you mentioned, Scott, find some great photographs of the differing types of tank engines here.
Yeah, there are people that collect these things like photos of trains, like people collect stamps or people collect, anything else. They love to go out and see them. They love to go to historic train events and museums and, old tracks where, historic trains have run or are still running. If there's a historic train, that's ever touring or, making one final run somewhere, that's when, these train spotters, these rail fans really come out. And you'll see the, every crossing, every hillside.
Foamers.
Loaded. Yeah, foamers. They'll be loaded with people taking video, people, still photography. Mm-hmm. It's really quite an event for somebody who's really into this hobby.
And you can't blame them because the history of this trains, especially in a lot of these tank engines, dates to a time when there was not uniformity in gauge and probably not as much uniformity in design.
No, definitely not. It was kind of, anything goes at that point. If you can make a design that works, fit it to whatever existing rail was in your area.
Right.
And that's good enough at that point, right? I mean,
yes.
They didn't have to worry about uniformity across the entire continent, as they do now. So, Can we move on to there are other types of tank locomotives? Now, we talked about the types of tank locomotives and that their side tanks, saddle tanks, etc.
Right, right.
But some of these have specific tasks, I guess, and that's maybe the best way to say it.
Oh, that's a great point.
There's just things like the crane tank, and these could be any type. Like so, you could have a saddle tank that's a crane tank, or you could have a well tank that's a saddle tank. That's a crane tank, rather. But the crane tanks, and I'm sure that people have probably seen these in old photographs, if nothing else, if not in museums. But it's just basically a steam tank locomotive that has a crane fitted to it. And it's a mobile crane, very useful in that, they can work in railway workshops or industrial environments and that, they can move along the tracks and move other cars or move heavy goods, to and from trains on different tracks. And it's just a very, very handy thing to have around. And because, it's a tank locomotive, it's very small, very efficient, very, very compact. These tank locomotives are just a great way to handle the duties of a crane tank, that a crane tank would require. Another type is a contractor's locomotive. And this sounds really, really, it's a simple idea, but they needed something really small. Let's say that you've got a civil engineering project that you're working on, way out in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
And one thing that comes to mind, you and I have both read the book Devil in the White City, right?
Yes.
And you remember when they were building the fair, the World's Fair.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
They laid temporary train tracks, right?
Mm-hmm, to bring in some of the materials that they would need to build.
Which sounds absolutely amazing that they would build a train system, a rail system, within the grounds of this fair in order to move things around, but that's what they did. They might have used something called a contractor's locomotive in order to get around, and that would be a tank locomotive that was small enough, very, very small, very lightweight, that was used for hauling men or equipment or building materials over what they called temporary railway networks, at the work site. And a lot of times you got to remember that, those, temporary tracks were frequently picked up and then relayed somewhere else and they're on uneven ground and they're kind of shifty,
That's what gets me, just the phrase temporary rail track.
I mean, the whole idea behind, operating a contractor's locomotive to me sounds a little bit scary. Now they're built as light as possible so that, they don't sink in because, these rails are oftentimes uneven. The main fear here was that they would derail.
Yeah.
And I guess they often did. So
it's a plausible fear.
Keep it as lightweight as possible so you're able to get that thing back on the tracks as easy as possible. But, a contractor's locomotive, that to me sounds like maybe one of the scariest rides here. Yeah, yeah. I've got a couple of other types that I want to mention here.
Yeah.
This is an interesting one. The fireless locomotive. Now, this is really weird. They carry, and I'd never heard of this type before.
Yeah. Break this down for me.
It's a steam locomotive. They carry their fuel, which is steam, in a reservoir. And so it's called a steam accumulator. And the reservoir is filled from an external source with steam. Mm-hmm. And then some of these locomotives are also fueled by pressurized air, but not steam. So some are run via air, which I had no idea was going on.
Wow, air-powered locomotives.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, I just think it's so odd to be able to carry steam in a compartment separate that you're not creating on board. So they're not really burning anything. They're not really keeping it. They're just using the steam as almost like drawing it from a fuel tank to use it. So they call it a fireless locomotive. I had never heard of anything like that.
Yeah, that is strange.
I mean, I guess fireless locomotive, that'd be an electric one, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Maybe that would be it. But this is still steam powered in it, and it's called fireless.
That is fascinating.
And maybe two more types, Ben, and I'll just quickly mention them. We can kind of wrap this up. I've got, again, benefits and, disadvantages to go through, but, there's also the steam tram engines, which are built to work on a street or any kind of tramway that's on the road, which I thought was unusual, because usually we see those as electric or the type that are friction. They grab the underground cable.
Right, yeah.
I'm making the motion like everybody can see it. and there's also something called a vertical boiler locomotive, which is maybe the strangest looking ones. It looks like it has a pot on board. With a smokestack at the top and really, really small design, square with two boxes on the end. Very, very small, kind of cheap machine to operate, but early design. I think once you see one of these, you'd know exactly what they are.
I am so glad that you said that because I want to kick off our list of pros and cons here with one big pro. it's cheaper to operate one of these engines, at least for the purposes they're using it, you know, within short runs, like 20 miles of shunting work or whatever.
Yeah. Very good. All right, so you want to work on our pros first?
Yeah.
Or do you want to do disadvantages first and then back it up with some of the positives?
Well, you know what? I'd probably jump the gun. We should probably do negatives first.
All right, let's do that. We'll work on the disadvantages first. So let's talk about limited fuel and water capacity. Now, we kind of knew that. We've been hinting at that all along. Mm-hmm. But they carry far less, I guess we'll call it fuel.
Yeah.
The water and, you know, coal or whatever it happens to be. But they can, because of the size, you know, they have the restriction that the ones that carry the additional tender don't have.
Right. And again, this could vary because, as we saw, that not all of these are, created with the same range or same fuel capacity. Even.
Sure.
Okay. That's a huge disadvantage.
All right. The next one is, they have varying what they call adhesive weight. Now adhesive weight is, you know, when you've got weight above the drive wheels of these things. So, you know, when you're in progress, when you're in transit, I guess, you're using up what's creating that adhesive weight. So, you know, you're using up the fuel, the water, the coal, whatever it happens to be. It's mostly water in this case. So, as you travel, there's less and less weight above the drive wheels. And that's a problem as well. Whereas with a standard locomotive, you know, if the weight is carried elsewhere, that adhesive weight remains the same. So maybe there's more weight built into the engine to begin with, so it has greater traction. But, you know, with these, it's continually getting lighter and lighter and lighter, and until you refuel, it doesn't come back.
Yeah. Yep. That's a bummer, man. So, there's no way around that.
So a varying adhesive weight is the way they put that.
Yeah.
Instability. That's another one.
Sure.
Now, if you got water that's surging within the tanks, you know, it's kind of rocking around, that can cause some problems with, you know, these are a lot smaller than some of the bigger locomotives. So, oftentimes they're prone to derailment in that case. Not always. I mean, it has to be pretty dramatic for that to happen, but it does. There's also axle load limits, which are sometimes a problem with this because, with the larger locomotives, it's hard to put much fuel and water aboard without requiring more axles than a rigid frame can handle. So these have a rigid frame, and there's limitations that go along with that.
Right.
There's also a and this is the last one. There's also a limit of the boiler diameter. Now, you know, when they've got all these different tank varieties, you have to have a smaller boiler because you're either going to put tanks on the side of it, above it, below it, somewhere around them, so that the boiler can't be as large as some of the older steam engines that we've seen. They're just, you know, these enormous tanks, because of the fuel and the water being housed elsewhere, not right on top of that.
Yes.
There's a little design size restriction there. And that's the last disadvantage I have, really. Then we move on to the pros.
Okay, I'll do one pro. There's a versatility there that a lot of other things don't have. You know, on a yard, we need to remember that these engines spend a lot of their time in backwards as well as forward motion.
Sure.
And in this position, then that shorter length is an advantage.
Yeah, and not only that, did you know that tank engines can run at full speed in either direction, which is something that a standard steam engine cannot do because they've got the tender back there.
Yep.
And I don't know if that's exactly the only reason. I think that the tender is one of the reasons
because you have to push
the tender, I guess, if you're running in reverse and at higher speed, so they can become unstable if they're at high speed. Now, if they're pulling it, that's not a problem, but a tank engine does not have that issue, so it can go full speed forwards, full speed reverse. Another one is that, well, of course, we mentioned that the fuel and water, they add to adhesive weight, but that's also a con in that, you know, we said that it varies.
Yeah.
So that can go away as well. But it does initially put more weight on the driving wheels when it's fully loaded. So, there are times when a tank engine is better off than a conventional steam engine in that case.
And I've got an advantage here.
What's that?
They are also, durable.
Okay.
Some tank engines are still running in parts of Europe. So
they're very good.
Yeah. So
so the design holds up.
Right. And this also this is not a point that is exclusive to tank engines. As we know, if they're well maintained, locomotives can have a lot of staying power.
Oh, sure. They're made of very, very thick gauge steel, and they're going to last a long, long time as long as the maintenance is there.
Yeah.
But that's very critical, and that has to be from day one, right?
Yeah, it has to be the whole time.
Exactly. So we're talking, you know, something 100 years ago. You don't know how it was maintained versus it is now. So
yeah.
Hopefully there are a lot of them around. I mean, I think they're kind of a cool thing. They're very compact. That's another advantage, really, in that they're shorter than the equivalent tender locomotive.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that, you know, of course, they're very small, very efficient, I guess, is the last one, really.
Yeah.
That, you know, a lot of the tank designs are, you know, well, they're in contact with and heated by the boiler, like we mentioned, so that the, you know, they're very efficient in the way that, you know, the water that normally would come in cool to a steam engine is already preheated, in that, you know, it reaches its boiling point faster than the colder water that would come from a tender would. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this efficiency that we talked about, or rather the heating that we talked about earlier, lends to efficiency. So
yes.
Very, very efficient design. I think that, you know, these tank engines have a lot going for them, really.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and before we close, I have one more thing.
Okay.
One more thing.
Scott, did you know that the origin of the tank engine is uncertain?
I did not know that. You would think that you could point to
a specific person.
A single person or a single vehicle that would be the first, right?
Well, remember earlier in this episode where I said one of the first in England or in Britain that was working by, you know, I really,
sure,
really draped some qualifications on that.
You're pretty vague about it.
I'm a sketchy dude when it comes to tank engines.
And other things.
mainly tank engines. so there's a great book called A Century of Locomotive Building, that has a reference, some ideas about tank engines.
Mm-hmm.
A guy named John B. Jervis, chief engineer, Delaware and Hudson Canal Company, wrote a letter in 1828, saying that it would be, I quote, desirable to dispense with the tender carriage, to have a water tank fixed to the engine. But it's not exactly known when that idea came to pass. It's not proven. So, it's really difficult, you know. As we know, there's another show at How Stuff Works called Stuff of Genius, and I've written for that show before. And one of the things that we find there is that invention is more often than not a story of different people standing on different people's shoulders. Some things get invented concurrently in different parts of the world by people who never spoke to each other, but very rarely is an invention made out of whole cloth by one person.
Hmm.
So I don't know if we can say that this chief engineer Jervis even had the original idea, but he had one of the documented cases that makes it in writing. So the origin of the tank engine, for now, must remain mysterious.
You know what? I thought you were going to surprise me with something here. I thought you were going to go all the way back to our good pal Leonardo da Vinci. Because, you know, as we know, he invented everything else in the world, right?
He probably did the first podcast, too.
Yeah, he probably did. Yeah, he probably has, and we'll find it later. But I thought for some reason you were going to shock me with that. But this is just as good. I mean, that, you know, it's this vague beginning. And, I mean, I'm sure there's a patent out there for each of these designs. But
right.
But actually, the design of the thing and the actual implementation goes prior to that even.
Mm-hmm.
And, so interesting.
It'd be interesting. We'd like to hear more about it. If anybody is a train historian, or if you've listened to our earlier podcast on circus trains and you like to think of yourself as a bit of a ferroequinologist, then go ahead and drop Scott and I a line. You can find us on the internet. We're on Facebook at CarStuffHSW. We're on Twitter too, right? And
sure.
We had some great Twitter comments recently. And we're also able to be reached by email. If you want to just send us an email with suggestions for upcoming topics, haikus, funny references, anecdotes, well, we're up for it. Drop us a line at
CarStuffAtDiscovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.